This is a special presentation of Wolf Boom Radio News, live on Oldies 101 and WMUN Muncie, the 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum, anchored by reporter Brett Busby and moderated by Director of News Operations Steve Lindell.
The Leagues of Women Voters of Muncie, Delaware County, Anderson-Madison County, Hamilton, and Howard Counties. On the stage tonight will be the candidates, incumbent Republican Victoria Spartz, Democrat Deborah Pickett, Independent Robbie Slaughter, and Libertarian Lori Shillings. They'll be on the stage, and you'll be hearing each one of them as moderator Steve Lindell brings you the questions that they have asked. Indiana's 5th Congressional District takes up a large portion of Indiana.
Policy and educational organization encourages informed and active participation in government. It does not support or oppose any political party or candidate. We are pleased to offer this nonpartisan event to help inform and engage the citizens of Indiana Congressional District 5. Our format for the evening, in a moment, I'll briefly introduce the candidates. At that time, they will each have 2 minutes to make an opening statement. The volunteers in the audience have cards with pencils for audience member questions. These questions will be reviewed by members of the League before being passed on to myself to be read. Questions will be reviewed for clarity of language, handwriting, repetition from previously asked questions, and appropriateness of topic and language. The content and intent of the questions will not be modified. Candidates, when we ask the questions of you, will each have 1 minute to answer the question, rotating and responding. Timekeepers will be giving you a time check with 20 seconds remaining when the time is up. They'll let you know that as well. Photographs will not be taken during the forum except by the League and by the media. Each candidate will have 1 minute for a closing statement at the end of the evening, and then I'll make a brief closing statement after that. We ask that you please keep your reactions and applause on hold, except for the beginning and end of the forum. We are going to applaud them all for being here after their brief introduction right now. And as we begin, alphabetically, Deborah Pickett is the Democratic candidate, Lori Shillings, the Libertarian candidate, Robbie Slaughter is the Independent candidate, and Victoria Spartz, the Republican candidate, all for U.S. Congress, Indiana's 5th District. You may all give them a warm welcome, please. And the microphone should be in the hand of our first candidate now. The microphone runner has a very important job. We start in alphabetical order. The first opening statement coming to Deborah Pickett.
Good evening. I am Deborah Pickett, your Democratic candidate for the 5th Congressional District. Tonight we come before you to win your vote with our words and our ideas, not with a threat of bloodshed. That happens with dictatorships. I wear white to honor the suffragettes who worked hard to secure the right for women to vote. I am here to remind you that it was a very hard and long fight to win that vote, to that right to vote. And yet it took a panel of justices, 9 people, 5, to overturn one of your rights, specifically your reproductive rights. My campaign arises out of deep concern for the attacks on our democracy and our rights, and out of a desire to restore Congress as a place that works for the people to get things done. Our democracy is the most precious treasure we have. It is the envy of the world. It gives power to the people and their representatives. Our democracy and Constitution are based on the principles of justice, fairness, and equality for all. It is a framework for how to resolve our complex problems. Our democracy gives us freedoms to be the master of our destiny as long as we do no harm to others. My life has been guided by our democracy and our freedoms. As a former United States Army reservist, I pledged my honor and my life to protect the United States Constitution and the American people. As a former researcher at Hudson Institute, I saw how our democracy and our institutions advance Americans' ingenuity, resourcefulness, and economic prowess in our global world. As a community activist, I look to the guiding principles of our democracy that brings people together to solve problems even at the local level. I was the voice for those too young, too frail, and too afraid to speak up. We are a country that believes in the voice of all people, no matter your age, race, gender, or sexual identity.
The next candidate now, Lori Shillings.
Good afternoon, and thank you for coming all the way to Anderson to witness this event today, and thank you for the League of Voters for having us. My name is Lori Shillings. I'm your Libertarian candidate on your ballot. And I came into the Liberty Movement in 2018 when I looked at how our government was no longer responding to their constituents in a way I felt was meaningful, was honest, and represented us. And so the Libertarians bring to the table the idea that only you can make the best choices for your life. The government really shouldn't be involved. And I truly believe that, because there's been times in my life when I have witnessed the service of my family. My father's been in civil service for 50 years, either as a policeman or an EMT or as a firefighter. And I see that shining representation of what it means to truly be a public servant, and then I compare it to our government representation today. And I find that they are incredibly disconnected. They really don't come talk to me. They don't understand what I'm going through in my life, or I don't believe they know what you're going through in your life. And so I'm here before you today to say that I feel I am able to represent you because I understand what you're going through in your life, because I've lived in Indiana my whole life here, and I've worked and struggled and tried to maintain my level of livelihood, and I would like to represent you to try to bring those struggles to the government and so that they can understand you a little bit more, too. Thank you.
There's an old saying, a bad system will defeat a good person every time. And my friends, we are experiencing a terrible system in our country. The system of political parties and special interests. The system of money, which has changed our process from one of debate, one of discussion, one of lively interaction and engagement, one of collegiality, into one of abject hatred and destruction. We no longer have the country in which I grew up, in which there were candidates of different stripes, and you would vote for one, and maybe the person you wanted would win, maybe they didn't, but you had confidence they could work with the other side and get things done. That time seems to have come to an end. My name is Robbie Slaughter, and I've never been involved in politics before. I've been like you, watching from the sidelines, trusting our representatives to do good work. But I have seen the decline of our system, of how these special interests, and unfortunately the parties behind them, have created so many challenges. And it's not about the people in the group. It's the bad system defeating those people that has created the issues that we face. I made the decision to run as an independent candidate, not realizing the challenges it would face. Because for me to be on your ballot in November, I had to crisscross our district and get 6,000 signatures from individuals. I had to convince them to give me their name, their signature, their date of birth, and their address to say that it was okay for me to run against the party candidates come November. Now, these challenges that we face are not insurmountable. We can have the kind of dialogue, the kind of cooperation, the kind of collegiality that our founders dreamed of. It was George Washington who agreed that we should not divide ourselves into factions, but to focus on the goal of public service. And if tonight I have one goal, above all, which is to earn your trust, the trust that our government has lost from the people, and the trust we must desperately have in order to move forward.
Candidate Robbie Slaughter, and now Victoria Sparks' opening statement.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the candidates being here today. I know it's not an easy to run for office, and it's not easy to represent the people, but it's very important. And I know our republic, our constitutional republic, is going through very challenging times, but that's not the first time, that's not the last time, and we'll have to restore the freedoms. We have to restore the prosperity for the American people, and I think it's going to be a big fight in November, and it's important. These battles are important, and I hope we have battles of ideas and policy. I've never been chosen by the establishment of my party. I was chosen by hard-working good people on the ground that believe that I'm go and fight in the trenches for you, and sometimes against my own party when I believe they were not right. And I'll continue doing it because I truly believe we're the greatest republic that ever existed in the history of the world. And we are not going to be generation that are going to let it fail. We have lots of issues. We need to revamp our economy. Our debt is crushing with inflation. You know, we need to make sure that we secure our border. We need to make sure that we deal with China and have strong national security and strong military and support our veterans that come back home. But I can commit for you that I've been in a lot of trenches and I won some battles, but we're going to win this war. And after November, if we and my party earn your vote and support, I'll tell you, I'll do whatever it takes to bring our country back to what it needs to be and how many Americans die for what we are. So this is a very important times, very challenging times, but I believe the future of Republic will be bright. I see the people on the ground who are kind of joking that, you know, Congress has 12% approval rating. I would be very depressed if we would have 80 or 90. But Congress needs to step up, and I'll do my part, and I'm very honored to represent all of you, but I'll make sure that my Congress will go back and deliver for we the people, because there is no lobby for the people in Washington, D.C., and we must be the lobby, and we'll deliver. Thank you.
All right, now we'll begin with the questions and answers. Deborah Pickett will be the first to hear the first question. We will rotate through the dais here. The first question will then go to the next candidate and so on. Each of you will have 1 minute to respond to the following question. What will be your top legislative priority if you go to the U.S. House of Representatives?
My top legislative priority would be to codify Roe v. Wade. That is one of the most important rights that has been that was violated, and it is most important to just about every woman in the United States of America. That would be my first priority, top priority.
Same question to Lori Shillings.
Thank you. My top legislative priority would be to reduce the national debt. We are, what, $34, $36 trillion, and we're just barely making the interest payments now. So our top priority needs to be keep our government in check, to cut off the government credit card, and make them live within their means.
Robbie Slaughter.
The greatest challenge we face in our country is not foreign policy, it's not the economy, it's not the southern border, it's not education. It's that we no longer trust our leaders. And without trust, nothing is possible. That's why we need to demonstrate our commitment to service and to going home by enacting term limits as a fundamental policy. Term limits are a great example of something which show our devotion to doing the work and then handing it over to whoever comes next. And by focusing on term limits, which is a challenging thing to do constitutionally and structurally, we're able to demonstrate to every American that Congress is there to serve for a few terms and then hand over the reins to the next set of Americans. That was the intention of the founders, and I think the fact that we do not trust our candidates and our elected officials anymore can only be resolved by giving up power through mechanisms like term limits.
Next speaker, Victoria Sparks.
Probably, among other things, our problem, one of the biggest issues we're facing right now is the national debt. We have $35 trillion debt. We're spending on interest more than national defense, over $1 trillion, which we just spent recently. Our inflation is destroying opportunities for people with low income, for people on fixed income, and if we start raising taxes, we will have no middle class. One of the biggest drivers, not maybe as popular issues, but I work for this issue for very long, one of the biggest drivers of national debt is broken and corrupt health care. One of six Hoosiers in insolvency for medical debt. One third of our budget is spent on health care. We're subsidizing large oligopolies that now deliver nothing, and they only compete for fee-for-service money. And it's really becoming destruction of America. 30% of our kids are only eligible to go in the military for health reasons. There is no reason for us to be a healthy nation. This is a national security crisis. It has to be fixed, and I think we'll deliver some reforms.
Next question will first go to Lori Shillings. And again, for the sake of our audience, I'm mentioning the candidate's name each time because of our radio broadcast on four frequencies right now. They don't have the luxury of seeing who is answering, so we want to make sure to add that in. The next question from an audience member, would you be in favor or opposed to the continuing budget resolution in Congress right now?
Has anybody been able to actually read the entire budget? And how can you vote for something if you don't even know what's in it in its entirety? It would be very hard to do. I agree that government needs to continue functioning. I think it does need to be reduced in its spending. If we can cut 10% of our military spending, that's a huge amount. Anytime we can cut corners, just like we have to with our personal budgets, we need to do that as well. And I think government should be held to the same standards. You know, we can't keep living in our credit cards, neither should the government.
And Robbie Slaughter, next to answer.
Our politicians are like petulant children. And instead of actually doing the hard work of negotiating and finalizing the budget, every so often they threaten or successfully shut down the government, which not only puts millions of Americans' incomes at risk, but also creates a massive economic shock. The CR is not complicated. It simply says let's continue funding until we can resolve something, and it is a good first step to demonstrate the actual intent for collegiality and compromise. Yes, our budget process is broken. Yes, we don't do nearly enough to review the existing spending and make the appropriate changes. And yes, cuts where we need to have happen. But continuing to behave in this way, which no other organization could get away with, is completely inappropriate. And I think it's a failure of our constitutional republic when we cannot pass a budget and we throw the government into disarray by doing so.
Next answer to Victoria Sparks.
This is an issue that's been not dealt for a quarter of a century now by many Congresses because this is tough. Over 70% of spending is now not even authorized by Congress. This is an issue that we have to. We cannot continue upon this down the road. I think Reagan said 40 years ago Congress will deal with that. Well, guess what? 40 years passed. We've done nothing. The only good thing, the things are getting so bad that we'll have to start dealing. That's why I said it should be bicameral, bipartisan issue. The first time in over two decades, we actually had the fiscal commissions on the floor of Congress, you know, on the House, couldn't convince the Senate. I hope that next Senate will be much better, and I'll do my part, but I think at least we started this conversation, but we have to deliver on this. This is not a way to govern. We cannot continue wasteful spending and destruction of the country. This is something I've done for living as a CPA finances. Unfortunately, no one likes to do it, so I'll force my Congress to start doing its job.
All right, the final person to answer this question will be candidate Deborah Pickett.
The budget resolution and its contents, again, are very onerous, difficult to understand. There are so many different components that it's very hard for the legislator, much less the staff, much less any American, to understand what its contents are and what the implications are for us, as Americans. I would have to say that I am up here because I have been so unhappy with the chaos that I've seen in Congress, particularly under the Republican leadership in the House. I would have to blame Victoria Sparks for the fact that they've now had two speakers of the House. They could not agree on their leadership. The rules of Congress, which they made up themselves, continue to allow the leadership to turn a very high turnover rate. There are major problems, and it is time for Congress to come together and start acting on behalf of Americans.
Next question from the audience, and this one goes to Robbie Slaughter first, please. What can you do as a U.S. House representative to help reduce inflation for Indiana's families?
Well, first of all, we should understand what the word inflation means. Inflation is simply a measure of prices, and prices are going up, and the reason prices are going up is because companies set prices to whatever value they want. It's not so much that we have an inflation crisis. That's a misnomer. What we really have is an affordability crisis because things always cost more than they used to cost, right? Gas used to be cheaper. Bread used to be cheaper. It will be more expensive in the future. The question is, are you making the income? Do you have the opportunity to move forward? And the best role of Congress is to continue to pressure companies to pay, have appropriate prices, but more importantly, to make sure we're creating economic opportunity for individuals. And that's with individual tax credits, that with individual job training programs, to ensure that we can continue to raise our incomes, raise our opportunity to be able to have more purchasing power to afford that which is in our lives. That is the challenge ahead. That's what Congress can do.
Next speaker, Victoria Sparks.
I just wanted to kind of quickly respond on what Ms. Pickett said. Actually, the challenges that we have and why we have this fight is because we didn't allow Speaker McCarthy to be Queen Pelosi. We didn't allow him to be a king. And we wanted to have 72-hour rules to make sure that people can read some of these bills, make sure that we have single subject matter bills and have some accountability from the speaker to the people and to ranking command members of actually member of Congress, because we all represent the same people. That's why this fight's happening. If we don't reform the structure of Congress, we will never be able to save this republic. As related to actual inflation, there are three biggest drivers for inflation. It's spending. In 21 and 22, 80% of money that ever were printed in history of our republic were printed in 21 and 20, in 2 years. Lack of energy policy, we're now destroying our Alaskan energy, domestic energy, and let adversaries make money on that, and dependency of our supply chain on China, which is taking American jobs. We have to get back jobs to America. That will help inflation significantly.
And next to answer to candidate Deborah Pickett at the end of the table.
Well, first of all, inflation is down. And that was reported this morning in the Wall Street Journal. It's now low enough that next week, most likely the Federal Reserve will be lowering your interest rates. You will have a lower interest rate for your mortgage. You will have a lower interest rate for your automobile loan. The price of fuel is down from a year ago. That means that that will be a less costly winter. That means that your electrical bill will be lower. That means also that if you want to buy a car, the price of a car is now down. So actually, inflation has gone down. The other thing is that we have a policy that was started under the Trump administration and has been continued under the Biden administration, and that is our punitive tariff policy that is very inflationary and that needs to be revised, and those tariffs need to be removed on some of those products. That is very inflationary, and it's a tax on the American people.
Same question to Lori Shillings.
Thank you. Inflation is a hidden tax on the American people. When the government overspends, then they have to start paying interest, and that's related to other fees and taxes on you. So that's how any government entity acquires money, is it's from your pocket. They don't make any money. They're not a self-generating industry. They relay those costs to you. And so that's why things become more expensive. When an industry has to pay more for its products, it has to pay more for things through taxation, that means you're ultimately, as a consumer, being paid or paying more for that particular product. So, you know, the only way we're going to combat that is to strictly reduce spending in the government. And, you know, any way we can do that is going to be imperative, and that's what we need to focus on.
Next audience question coming to Victoria Sparks for the first one to answer, 1 minute answer to, it says, if elected, but I will revise this in your case, if re-elected, and the other candidates, if elected, will you support the border bill passed by the Senate?
Well, actually, people, the devil is always in the details. Actually, I work and we pass in the House real good border bill because we need to tighten our immigration laws and border security laws that each administration cannot manipulate them and have lawlessness and disaster, national crisis right now on the border. Think about it. Mexican cartels now working with China, bringing fentanyl in our country that kill over 100,000 Americans. Think about if we would have a war where over 100,000 Americans would be dying every year. We have now terrorists, on people on terrorist lists able to cross that border. It is a disaster. It is insanity. We have lawlessness. We have illegal aliens now overwhelming the systems. So we had a very good bill, H.R. 2. We sent it to the Senate. They diluted it with messaging, talking points, loopholes, just put lipstick in a pig, and last second, suddenly, 6 months before the election, decided, oh, we now start dealing with border security. Where have you been the rest of your term? It's insanity. If you go there, you'll be very scared.
Thank you very much, Victoria Sparks. The next answer to candidate Deborah Pickett, please.
I would support the bill. I would support this bill because at least it is a compromise that the Republicans and the Democrats arrived at. It is a bill that does provide measures for security at the border. It also acknowledges the fact that we have, in the state of Indiana, a very different situation than those states along the southern border, and that is we have a huge shortage of workers. Immigrants are critical to actually charging and supporting our Indiana economy. They serve in many different industries, the hospitality, the construction, the agriculture. It is necessary that with visa expansions and with other measures that are advantageous to not only businesses but also to the Americans, that the immigration bill be passed, and I would be in favor of it.
Candidate Lori Shillings.
Thank you. Well, the fact is that the path to citizenship in America is so stunted right now. Legitimate individuals who want to come to our country, who are good-meaning people, they just want to work, they want to be able to provide for their families, they're escaping situations where, you know, if your family was being war-torn or being, you know, enslaved by cartels, you would also want to flee that. You would want the best for your children and your family. And I think that's probably something that we need to work on, is find a better path to citizenship here. It could take upwards of 20 years for someone to apply through the regular channels. That's why we have illegal immigration, is because they cannot find any relief. So there needs to be a better path for that. We need to modernize immigration. I do not think we need to tighten it. I think we need to make what we have work better. There's a huge shortage of workers here already. Let's find a path of citizenship to them and make them regular citizens so they can be part of our tax roll, if you want to put it that way. But they want to be productive too.
Candidate Robbie Slaughter is next to answer.
Asking if someone should support this border bill is kind of like asking if you'll pitch in for some scotch tape for a patient riddled with bullet holes. Okay, yes, it's a step in the right direction, but it's not even the appropriate focus, because our immigration system and our management of the refugee crisis that's happening right now is utterly broken. We have not reformed or analyzed these laws significantly in decades. And furthermore, we have kicked that responsibility down to the individual agencies who are not implementing them in a consistent way. So this system is so broken that, yeah, sure, the bill as written provides some minimal benefits, but it doesn't begin to tackle the scale of the challenge we have, because we are facing a refugee crisis of unprecedented proportions in modern times, and we are not going to solve this problem with the kind of partisan bickering that we experience today. We've got to think bigger. We've got to work harder. We've got to work together.
Next question to Deborah Pickett. First to answer this question from the audience, this is regarding Ukraine. The question from the audience, verbatim, are we going to fund money for Israel and Ukraine, and how would you describe your support of Ukraine in its fight against Russia?
Well, as a former United States Army reservist, and someone who also studied national security and international affairs at Hudson Institute, our commitments to our foreign allies is very important to me. And I am very much in favor of support for Ukraine. That was something that I found incredibly astounding, that Representative Spartz voted against funding for Ukraine, that as someone who actually Ukraine was her birthplace, and understanding better than anyone what the threat of Putin is and Russia is as a neighbor, it was astounding to me that she voted against that funding. I am absolutely in favor of funding Ukraine and Israel, and I'm also in favor of, for the reason that Russia is not only the enemy of Ukraine, it's the enemy of the Europeans and also the enemy of Americans. If you want to have keep our defense budget lower and bring it lower, then you have others fight.
Thank you very much, Deborah Pickett. Lori Shillings next to answer.
Thank you. I'm a big advocate for non-aggression. So anytime there's war where we have to leave our soil and send our entire citizenship to places where they are not involved, that really disturbs me. And the fact is that we're not sending crates of money overseas. What we're doing is sending crates of money to our military establishment to make weapons, and then those weapons go overseas. So we're just basically funding our own war machine here in the United States. I think there needs to be something said about absolute annihilation when it comes to the Gaza Strip in Israel. I feel that's a humanitarian crisis now. And I think that we should stop being the world's policemen overall, and we should kind of focus more on what we're doing here in our own land.
Candidate Robbie Slaughter.
We are in an impossible situation, both in Ukraine and Israel, in which there are no good answers, only less bad answers. If we increase our support for either one of these conflicts, we are only going to aggravate the enemy further and create more chaos and death and destruction, perhaps on a scale that we haven't seen in living memory. And if we pull back our support and reduce our commitment, we're going to see even further destruction. In the case of Ukraine, we'll likely see that country overrun, and in the case of Israel, we're likely to see the Israelis, without a strong ally on the West, take off the kid gloves and do even more destruction than we can possibly imagine. The failure of foreign policy of past administrations and the past Congress has put us in this place. And the only way we can begin to fix this issue is by doing the hard work of diplomacy, calling for peace, calling for ceasefires, and rebuilding relationships where trust has been lost at home and abroad.
Candidate Victoria Sparks.
Peace only works through strength, if I remember President Reagan. Unfortunately, we have very weak administrations. Fail us in Afghanistan, we were just given 13 medals, congressional medals, to fallen soldiers in Kabul, and one of the Hoosiers. You know, it was a disaster. It was embarrassing, abandoning our allies. We failed in Ukraine and Russia, if you remember that, you know, that President Obama and Vice President Biden gave blankets when they entered Crimea. President Trump was the only one who was putting sanctions on Russia. It was very tough. And he was the one who gave Ukraine weapons. He was the one who had Abraham Accords, where we actually had peace in the Middle East. And now we have a serious war can escalate further. We have China advancing all around the world. We need to have strong leadership of the United States to deter aggression so we don't have to be war. But we cannot have slush funds and oversight. $1 billion from Ukrainian aid was sent to Houthis in Yemen that shoot in American ships. That is irresponsible and reckless. And I'm not going to be supporting no strategy and slush funds.
Lori Shillings is the first to answer the next question. Several questions tonight from the audience about public education and issues related to vouchers, of course, are awarded by state governments. But what the question is related to, is there still a role for public education, and what role do you see public education playing in our democracy? Additionally, do you support government funding for non-public schools? 1 minute.
I don't think the government really needs to be in the education business, to be brutally honest. In 200 years, we've not had one metric that's improved. We're falling behind globally in our education system. Our students are falling behind in their technology learning and in their skill sets. I work in higher education, and I see the struggle every day when those students come in and what they do and what they're accomplished compared to what I would have done when I was in school. And then I am very sad by that sometimes. There are outliers, you know, where you're like, wow, you're exceptional at what you do. And then there's others who are just going through the motions. I'm not in favor of the voucher system. I think it's been abused and adapted by the government in ways that it shouldn't have been. In the beginning, it was a great idea to help fund underprivileged children to go to education systems where they wanted to go. And then it was opened up to a much higher income level. And then those people just kind of take advantage of that. And they probably didn't need that kind of support in the first place. I think that it should be privatized.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Robbie Slaughter next.
Perhaps the most profound irony on the topic of education is how miseducated so many people are on the government's role in the process. First of all, the federal government does not control education. The federal government provides a little bit of support, a few grants and some guidelines. It also runs a federal student loan program at the university level, but it does not define what happens in your child's school. That's controlled by your state board of education and, most importantly, by your local community school district and your teachers. A second important misconception is that education is not getting better. It is getting better. Look at the National Coalition of Education Statistics, the nation's report card, and we are seeing improvement. But that's not the problem. The problem is we are falling massively behind of our peers. And the third and most critical thing to understand is that the government's role in education is not simply to support what we always have been doing, but to support the transformation of schools to the next century. Schools will look nothing in 50 years like they have for the past 500 years because of technology, because of innovation, because of understanding. And it is the government's role to facilitate that change along with smart interaction with the free market. That's the process we have to understand. And that's the process we have to work together in Congress and at all levels of our government.
Next to answer, Victoria Sparks.
public education, actually voucher on all public schools, it's all publicly funded education. As a society, we want to make sure that we invest in human capital in our children. We want to teach them that they're able to survive in a tough world and compete. You know, and the state will need to have to address this issue. Kids for 12 education, sexual state issue, but that is a national security crisis. Then our kids cannot read and do simple mathematics. An advanced job that now required advanced skills are not able to achieve in 13 years. That is crazy. That is unbelievable. But the federal government need to get our higher ed under control with crushing student debts and these colleges that, you know, what causing it, kids not be able to get any education, no skills and bunch of debt and not having jobs. We have to start reform and actually give more choice for kids and for families to obtain better skills and education and get into workforce, something that they can make living, not pay for debt and worthless diplomas, and federal government need to get that under control.
And the final person to answer on this question is Deborah Pickett, please. WMUN and Oldies 101 WHBU.
A public education is the most important investment that we can possibly make in our people. And the value of having a public education and the value of having a Department of Education is that it lays out certain standards. It is a great source for schools in developing standards and curriculum. We are a very transitory population now. We're moving from state to state. We're moving from community to community. It is important to have, to know that when your child is moving from one place to another, that you are your child will be at that same, be doing this, the same level. It is also important for elevating all of us out of our situations in life. It is what drives our innovation. We are one of the, we are the most innovative country in the world. So we are doing something right with our education system. It is also necessary that that our curriculum...
Thank you very much, Deborah Pickett. Robbie Slaughter is first to answer the next question for the candidates. Comes from an audience member, of course. The question is the minimum wage adequate for today's economic times? And if your answer is no, what should that minimum wage be?
Less than one-half of 1% of Americans make the federal minimum wage. In fact, more people are paid less than the minimum wage through various programs like the Sheltered Workshop program than make the minimum wage. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have some kind of program. It's just that the minimum wage doesn't work the way that it's supposed to work. And raising it dramatically, which has been tried in many places and studied by economists, doesn't always have the impact that is expected. That's why individual states and cities have control over the minimum wage. And I think because the economic variability is so significant based in individual places, we should continue to encourage states and cities and municipalities to adjust their wages accordingly. But in the long term, these kinds of regulations will not create prosperity. What will create prosperity is a government which is focused on building large-scale opportunity, not trying to regulate our way to success.
Victoria Smarts.
Government setting prices and wages is a bad idea, but the government needs to look at how we can grow the economy, that we can create good jobs, good paying jobs, how we can bring manufacturing back home, which is national security crisis, how we can help small businesses to succeed. Government is right now, trillions of dollars go to large oligopolies. We'll have oligopolies and oligarchs running this country very soon. When all of this money in Washington, D.C. go in this budget, most of it don't go to we the people, let's be honest. Congress needs to get our act together, and regulations are crushing of small businesses. If you want to start your own business now, you know, you will not be able to survive all of the state, local, federal regulations. We need to have strong economy, growth in economy, where people will make good living and be able to succeed and become wealthy, be in middle class and have a good living for their family, and it's not happening right now.
Next to answer will be candidate Deborah Pickett.
The smart companies and businesses know that if they want to attract and keep and also reward their employees, that they will have very competitive wages. If they do not have competitive wages, you're going to see that in a high turnover rate. I am in favor of actually Robbie's position, and that is that each community around the country has different economic situations, and so it is necessary that the wages be set according to the economic conditions of those localities. But for the most part, I would say that this is a constant issue. We need to make sure that our laborers are more than adequately compensated for their hard work, so they do not have to work two or three jobs. That is a very big problem that you see in different industries. You see that certainly in the hospitality industry. You see that in the healthcare industry. So the minimum wages is a...
Next up is Lori Shillings.
Thank you. So every time I've seen the government get involved, things have gotten worse. So, you know, there's examples where they're like, we're going to raise the minimum wage to $15, $20. My son works at a UPS hub, and they raised the rates there, and they immediately laid off several hundred people. Stores closed, less hours, less availability. So every time the government says, you must do this, Corporations then must say, okay, in order to afford that, I cannot do these other things. There's always a repercussion. And so the unintended consequences is every time the government says, you must do something, you're going to lose some personal freedom in return. If you're a business owner, then you're going to lose the ability to be able to charge things appropriately that's market rate. You're going to have to raise all of your prices. You may have to reduce your staff, therefore reducing your ability to serve who your actual customers may be. So I'm not in favor of raising the minimum wage at this time, and I think the way the government can help with that is to remove restrictions on some businesses so they don't have to pay as much to do what they do best.
Thank you very much. Victoria Spartz is first to answer the next question from an audience member. This is regarding campaign finance reform. What is your position on campaign finance reform? And also, if you could, what would your vote be to stop congressional representatives from trading stocks?
Now listen, I think, you know, we need to make sure that we look, you know, that attract more people that want to run for offices and then leave the laws they legislated, because it should be a tour of duty. And we have to start thinking about why this race is so expensive, how we can raise the money. I think it's a big challenge. I actually raised this issue with my state legislature because we control primary elections. I said, we have to think about it. We'll soon all have billionaires who want to get richer, just want to have a job for the, you know, to buy elections for just their fame, or some people that puppets to big machine of money be able to run for offices. So it's a serious issue. I think we should look at this campaign finance, you know, how we're going to have transparency, maybe reform, and maybe reform some of the primary elections. I think it's a big discussion that. And I think there should be some transparency. It's very interesting for me to see how some people have no stocks, and then suddenly they get lots of money, and they become very wealthy, and look at Biden Pelosi family. They had nothing, and they suddenly became also very well in Washington, D.C., but we also need to see if you have a retirement account,
Victoria,
you should be able to have it.
Deborah Pickett will be next to answer this question.
So I followed with great interest the activities of our legislators during the global pandemic, and I was really appalled to see that there were a number of investigations or a number of our legislators in Congress, senators who were chairing committees that took advantage of their access to information to trade their stocks. And so while we were struggling at home, they're profiting from the knowledge that they had that we did not have or that they were not sharing with us. When it comes to, so I think that was just completely unethical, but I do want you to know that there is an ethics committee that is responsible for overseeing these kinds of activities. When it comes to campaign finance reform, I would just like to say that I really encountered a most extraordinary situation with my own campaign. I managed to prevail in the primary, and I probably spent one-tenth the amount of my opponent. So it is not actually all about money. It is it certainly helps to get your message out there, but it
thank
is also...
Thank you very much, Deborah Pickett.
Thank
Laura
you.
Shillings, next to speak.
Yes, I do believe there should be campaign finance reform. As a libertarian, we're always self-funded. We don't get any money from the government to hold public primaries in the spring. We fund that ourselves. And, you know, the ability to say, hey, with Citizens United, anybody can contribute to this campaign. It's unregistered. It's kind of like a black hole of money at that point. We don't know who's contributing to their campaign sometimes because it's all gone into a super PAC. I would like to see that to be completely transparent so that everyone knows who's paying the ticket. Just like NASCAR drivers have a badge on their jacket, I think politicians probably should too. That way you know who's interested and how much power they have over that individual.
Robbie Slaughter, next to answer.
Members of Congress, as well as individuals in the government at every level, become millionaires in ways that would be illegal for the rest of us. Part of that is campaign finance, which has been so watered down that, in effect, money you get from people or from corporations can be spent on effectively anything if you have the staff and the accountants to be creative enough. It also includes Congress's new expense program, which, by the way, does not require you to submit receipts for lodging and incidentals. And our own legislators here in the state of Indiana have spent, I think, several million dollars already just the course of this year. And, of course, it includes the ability to trade stock with insider information. All of this should be absolutely illegal, because if we want to restore trust in our government, we have to demonstrate that we're there to do the job. In this campaign, $8.5 million has already been spent, most of it in the primary process. Imagine the good we could do with that money if we were focused on issues and people and not on ads and campaign consultants and making our representatives rich.
Next question to Deborah Pickett, I believe. We have a new question to go down the line of the four candidates here for the 5th Congressional District. This one from an audience member says, how would you fight climate change while also protecting the economy?
Well, climate change is a very serious existential threat to us. And while I've been out on the campaign trail, I've had an opportunity to talk to a number of farmers who are looking for crop insurance and the farm bill that has been delayed by Congress now for almost a year. We are seeing the costs of climate change, not only for farmers who have to worry about droughts and flooding events, but we're also seeing it for communities that have to maintain their bridges, their roads, drainage systems. They're being flooded now by these events that are much more extreme, and they're much more costly to the taxpayer. We're also seeing it at a more national level when you talk about the armed forces that now have to worry about their beaches and their facilities being flooded by storms. Our infrastructure is also very much compromised down in the Gulf of Mexico by these weather events. So,
candidate Lori Schillings next to answer.
Thank you. So if you have been alive longer than a minute, you have realized that our climate has changed. You can deny science all you wish. It's actually happening. Our climate, our world is warming. Statistics, science says that. And part of the contribution to that, and the majority of it, is our use of fossil fuels. There's clean, renewable energy that we can rely on. Nuclear energy is quite reasonable now, and it's very safe in comparison to some of the other things. Solar energy, the initial cost and expense of making those, and then the return on that should be beneficial. There's just so many more things we can do for our climate as a personally responsible individual or a personally responsible business to order to maintain that and still be profitable.
My next is Robbie Slaughter.
We have two problems, not just one. The first problem is that even though there is, of course, wide support among scientists and experts about the theory of climate change being well supported by evidence across a variety of analyses, a significant portion of Americans do not feel that this science is accurate. And it's almost impossible to make policy change when there's so much denial of something. Without that trust, it's difficult to act. And the second problem is that as much as effort has been made here in the United States to address these changes, most of the pollution and most of the climate-changing activity is not happening here. It's happening in India and especially in China. Now, this actually presents a solution to our problems, because if we are able to provide the appropriate pressure on China, the biggest polluter, we're also able to affect the economic changes we need to support our own economy in the process. So, yes, we've got to keep doing the good things we're doing, but we have to make sure the biggest polluters are stepping up as well, because they are creating the problem more than anyone else.
Next answer, Victoria Sparks.
We actually did pass extension of the previous farm bill, but actually, to truly to say, we should really have a conversation. Farm bill, you know, should be a discussion about the health of our nation, about competition for value, better food, and everything else. Just want to correct that. But it's related to climate. Listen, climate has been changing for centuries. We used to be an ice age. But Republicans kind of get the bad rap about, like, we don't care about environment. No, we do care about environment. We want to make sure that we have good energy policy and put everything on the table. What's happening right now? We are destroying domestic energy production, depending on foreign adversaries that want to destroy us. Let them finance bloodshed around the world. And China is polluting and increasing dirty coal and polluting the same ocean and in the same atmosphere. And we cannot build the water from them. So we actually have a net pollution adding right now and destroying American jobs. That is stupid. I think having jobs here and have good energy policy and non-politics will bring prosperity, stop inflation, and actually have us will be good for our country.
And candidate Deborah Pickett, next to answer, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that I answered the question.
Are we on to a new question now?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you for catching me.
Okay, yes.
So who's first on this one? I think Robbie Slaughter is next.
Yeah.
Thank you, candidates, for keeping me honest. It seems from an audience member like whomever wins on abortion, the country remains divided. Is there a path forward that we can live together on that issue?
Before I answer, I think it's important to acknowledge that I'm the only man on this stage, which puts me in a unique position to discuss this issue, and certainly any question about women's health and identity should be led by women. But it's true that we're not going to come to an agreement. We've been fighting about this issue for decades and decades, and no one is convincing anybody else of the best moral choice. But we do agree that we want fewer abortions, and we do agree, most importantly, that abortion is very much about women's safety. That when women feel safe, when they have opportunities in their lives, when they feel that they can make their own choices, and when the conversation is happening between them and their doctor without the police or the courts or the legislature getting involved, then we can have a real path forward. And the fewer abortions we have and the more safety there is for women at every level, the more this problem will stop being a problem and more be a part of our lives than moving away.
Victoria Smarts.
Actually, with the recent Supreme Court decisions, this issue was brought back to the states, to we the people. And we'll have to live with this idea that we'll have some more conservative states and some liberal states. And we don't have the borders from other states. People always can move to other states. But I think we'll have it. This is where it's called going to be closer to the people. And I think these decisions will be closer to the people. And it's a good thing. You know, so I would encourage you, you know, to get involved with more of a state legislature because it is became a state issue. And I think for some time, people will have to reconcile this issue. It might become a federal issue at some point again, but it's good when this issue reconciled first at the state level. I believe in pro-life issues, and Indiana legislature voted one way, so Ohio different ways, Florida other ways, and I think that is what the people's power is, and I think a lot of people wanted it. Those parties wanted it, and somehow now, when they don't like some results, they start to say, oh, it needs to become a federal issue again.
And candidate Deborah Pickett for that question, please.
The majority of Americans are actually in favor of an abortion, of a woman's right to make that choice regarding her reproductive rights. It is a decision that most women don't want to have to face. It's one that is private, and it's one that should be made with between the woman and their doctor. As Robbie said, it does come down to an issue of safety. It does come down to what kinds of options you have in your life, whether or not you have the support, whether or not your partner is still there to help support you, whether or not you have the finances to raise the children, whether or not you your own health is going to be at risk. So this should go back to the federal level. I am very much in favor of having a law put in place. Roe v. Wade should be codified, and this should be taken out of the states. It's just become now a fragmented mess.
Candidate Lori Shillings.
Thank you. Abortion in this nation has become polarized. It's become politicized, and it's ordered to make us hate them. It doesn't matter what your position is, it's always wrong. I'm not a physician. I'm not a medical provider. I should not be telling you how to live your life. I should not be making policy about those things. That is a choice between you, your physician, and your faith. No one else. Now, I do believe that your right to make that choice should be there, and it should be protected by law. What that choice is should not be in that law. And that is my answer.
All right. Next question to Victoria Spartz. And for the audience, as well as our television, streaming, and radio live listeners, in the interest of equity and, of course, timing, we are going to go just a moment past our scheduled time, but this will be the final question, and then the final statements, closing statements, will follow this. This question comes from the audience. How would you decrease the number of school shootings? Would you support federal legislation to do so?
As probably a lot of you know, I'm a strong supporter of Second Amendment. Second Amendment is for a reason, because this is to protect us and us from, really, from a tyranny of the government, from protect our family. This is the most important right, to protect our First Amendment rights. But we also need to make sure that we look at what's happening in our country with mental health issues, with what happens in our schools. I actually work on a bipartisan basis and pass legislation in Congress, in the State House, to deal with at-risk youth and better have reparative services and help schools to deal with some of the mental health issue. We need to expand them. Federal funding goes to the state and it's not implemented. And I'll work extremely hard to make sure that it actually gets to the community, because it hasn't got done to the community. Because we have to deal with mental health issue and educate our children and strengthen our children, but not taking their rights of law-abiding Americans.
Next answer to candidate Deborah Pickett.
Well, as a mother of three and a grandmother of four, this is an issue that is certainly of great importance to my own children and to me as well. The safety of our children is the most important thing to us. There are several things that Americans actually do agree on, even if you are a supporter of the Second Amendment, which I am. And as someone who also served in the United States Army, I understand how important your gun rights are. But they are, the certain agreements have to do with our background checks. People agree on the need for background checks. We agree on the need for permitting. We also agree that our arms, firearms, should be secured in your homes. If you want to fire, or you want to have an assault weapon, you should go join the United States military, because there you will have plenty of opportunity to fire your weapons as far as often as you want to, and you can do it in the defense of Americans. Thank you.
And Lori Shillings is next.
Thank you. How do you decrease school shootings? One is properly educate gun owners. One is make sure that they are responsible with their safety and containment of those arms, their personal safety and their children's safety. I'm an advocate for the Second Amendment. I'm a weapon owner myself. My children are highly educated when it comes to weapon usage. And I believe that that's part of the personal responsibility with that. However, when it comes to school shootings, you have to look at what causes that. And a lot of it is trauma. Trauma of the individual, their life, and how they have been treated in this world, and their lack of medical care. We need to change the stigma around mental health care in this nation and make it more accessible and affordable to them by removing government restrictions and making sure that those protected policies for insurance companies at the national level are removed, and that it becomes a competitive marketplace so people can actually pay for mental health care. That's basically what I think would help so much more than just creating a ban, as we
Thank
know.
Thank you. Candidate Robbie Slaughter is next.
My spouse is a social worker, and for several years they worked in school-based social work. And one thing that fascinates me about this issue is that we have failed completely to recognize how little we're investing in the mental health of our students. Less than half of all the schools in America have a social worker on staff, and most of those social workers are just part-time moving between schools. We have to commit to ensuring that every school in America has social workers, has counselors, has people available to build relationships with students and make sure that they are safe and loved and cared for. Now, school shootings in particular are
especially horrific aspect of gun violence in our country. And the number one cause of school shootings is the information and awareness that these shootings exist. The wall-to-wall coverage that we have for these shootings informs and tragically inspires the next generation of shooters. We have to turn off our TVs and talk to each other rather than glorifying the violence of the school shooter to create the next one.
We've come to the closing statements. We'll go in the same order we did for the opening statements. Alphabetically, Deborah Pickett will be first to speak. 1 minute for your closing statement to each of the candidates.
What an important evening this has been for all of us. There's much gratitude to organizations like the League of Women Voters, Muncie Resist, and Mad Voters. These are critical organizations that have been helpful in educating us on our democracy and our right to exercise our right to vote. Millions around the world are fleeing poverty, violence, and corrupt governments ruled by one person. They are willing to forge rivers and struggle through jungles and cross deserts to get to the United States. They want our democracy. They want our freedoms. They want our way of life. Our democracy allows people to rise from poverty. Our democracy makes us an audacious people. Our democracy is what makes us a U.S. audacious innovators. Our democracy is what makes us audacious global leaders. Please vote for Democrats this November. They have been the only party that has worked hard
to
save our democracy.
Lori Schillings, 1 minute closing statement.
Thank you. I decided to run for Congress because I looked out into the world and I said, they're doing it wrong. They're not representing me. They don't talk like me. They don't talk about the same things that I talk about. And I think that if I can get up in front of somebody and say, I truly want to represent you and your best interests, and if I wouldn't do that, then I'm part of that problem. You know, civic engagement is very important. You can't just throw out, there's a lot of things going on in the world without trying to provide a solution. So that's what I'm trying to do here today. I saw where our personal liberties were infringed. There's forced extreme agendas that coming through our government. And, you know, as a community, I want to say we need to act together, be civil, have conversations, and work together to make our nation great.
Next, Robbie Slaughter.
It should be clear to everyone watching tonight that all of the candidates on the stage care about our country and our democracy. And although we have different views, we're all here to engage with you. And in fact, I'm not really running against the people on this stage. I'm running against the partisan system. I'm running against the special interest. I'm running against the corrupting influence of money. Because that is the challenge that we face. And in fact, I'd invite all the candidates here to run again and run as an independent. Spend the time to get 6,000 signatures. Meet the people in your district. Focus on engaging and representing individuals and not having to kowtow to the requirements of your party, even if you're trying to fight them where you can. Because it's the parties and the special interests which have undermined our success in this country. We are an amazing nation. We have so much opportunity and potential. But we have to work together without the controlling influences to do the right thing.
And Victoria Sparks.
Thank you very much, and thank you, the candidates, for having a healthy debate. And I think that's very good for our republic. And I truly believe we might have much more in common than what divide us. But it's good to deliberate issue. I actually do in-person town halls. I'm the only legislator in Indiana does it. Please come to my town halls. I have a great team. We actually deliver. We solve a lot of issues because I understand how important and urgent a lot of issues. But I will also make sure that I will hold my own party accountable. If you give us a privilege to represent you and win for Republicans, I'll make sure that we're going to deliver a good economy. We're going to deliver strong border security and have peace through strength. It's very important because I truly believe the greatest times of our country are ahead of us. We have such an important opportunity for innovations and prosperity for every American. And I can reassure you, I will represent all of you, regardless if you vote for me or not, if I have an honor to represent you again. Thank you so much. It is my been privileged and honored to represent you. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the League of Women Voters has information on how, where, and when to vote for the upcoming election, as well as other voting information in the lobby. They also have information on the League's Vote 411 website with many more resources there as well. Now, please, let's give a round of applause to all of our candidates for their participation tonight. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and please do remember to vote.
All right, and you are listening to WMUN Muncie and WHBU Anderson. You've been listening to the Indiana 5th District Congressional Forum live from Anderson High School. Democrat Deborah Pickett, the Libertarian candidate Lori Shillings, Independent Robbie Slaughter, and, of course, the Republican incumbent Victoria Spartz on stage this evening. As you might expect, some criticism of policy from the candidates of current administration and, of course, of the incumbent's record. But overall, a nice civil discussion this evening, and that closing statement, I think, was very encouraging. You can hear a portion of tonight's forum on our Wolf Boom newscast over the next few days, as well as playback back on WMUNMuncie.com. And at this point, 7.04 p.m. from Anderson High School, I invite you to listen to our Wolf Boom stations tomorrow for more on tonight's forum. And so for Steve Lindell, that's going to do it. I'm Brett Busby. You're listening to WMUN Muncie and WHBU Anderson. We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming already in progress.